Welcome back, everyone. This is the second episode of the Basement Gallery's New Beginning podcast. Before we get started, I would like to preface everything and state that the views, opinions, and ideas presented in this podcast are those of the individuals in the Basement Gallery and our guests, and do not necessarily represent the views of the University of California, Davis and its affiliates. Now that we're done with that, I'm Jade RJ. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I'm a fourth year art studio design double major here at UC Davis, as well as the lead director of the Basement Gallery. I'm here with two of our guests and three of our, I'm here with three of our guests and two of our Basement Gallery members. I'll have everyone introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Rocio. My pronouns are she, her, hers. And I am a fourth year art studio major, and I am the lead preparator for the Basement Gallery.
Hi, my name is Zoe. I am an alumni from UC Davis. I used to work with these wonderful Basement Gallery people, and my pronouns are she, her.
I am Justin. I'm the director of communications for the Basement Gallery. I'm also an outgoing, soon to graduate art major. I'm also a guest on today's episode, and so I'm going to try to just only speak when spoken to today. Oh, and my pronouns are he, him, his.
Hello, I am Grace Wynn. I am a UC Davis alumni. I graduated in 2006. I am that old. My pronouns are she, her.
Hey, everyone. I'm Sierra Brown. My pronouns are she, her, and hers. I'm currently the art historian for the Basement Gallery here at UC Davis. I'm an English major, an art history minor, and I'm excited to talk with you all today.
Other than the questions we've borrowed from Paul Thek, today we'll kind of be talking about more about graduating and the world outside UC Davis. And I'm actually going to start with Grace. Your work, Desert Night 1, 2, and its iterations, I really enjoyed the abstraction and the textures that you've created in these pieces. Can you talk about your inspiration process and your intentions to create multifaceted and contradictory narratives in your images?
Yeah, sure. So I'm trying to get people to see the underlying meaning in the images I choose and recreate. So people might come up with different conclusions. The image itself was based on several photographs taken by National Geographic photographers and Smithsonian photographers of Sahara sand dunes, and how they really take on these incredibly abstract patterns, and especially when the sunlight or the moonlight hits them just right. They almost end up looking like Richard Serra sculptures. So when I look at them, you know, what I see is there are these things in nature that are very different, but they repeat themselves, whether it's ocean waves, sand waves, the way the wind moves in the atmosphere, like the jet stream. So there are just these things that keep repeating themselves. That's what I find interesting. Someone might look at it and come up with a totally different meaning. Some people say it reminds them of 1001 Arabian Nights, like it's the beginning of one of Scheherazade's stories. That wasn't really what I was thinking of, mainly because I'm not familiar enough with 1001 Arabian Nights, with the exception of Aladdin and maybe Sinbad. Was Sinbad in 1001 Arabian Nights? I really don't know. I don't know any of the other stories in there. So that wasn't what I was thinking of, but I can understand why people would think that.
Talked about nature and kind of repetition. Is repetition a large part of your work, or was this like mostly for this collection or these pieces?
It is not consciously a part of my work. It's just something that keeps showing up. A lot of people have said I seem to like patterns. So I guess that's true. I guess it's just something that's subconsciously with me, even though I'm not like, oh, I gotta make a pattern.
Okay, great. I'm going to move on to Justin. I wanted to talk about, especially one of the pieces that you submitted, Hearts and Minds, Motherfucker. You had said in your practice, you allow for detours for your ideas that present themselves as you're transitioning into a singular practice for your work. Why did you avoid making this piece, and why do you feel your work only needs to go in a singular direction?
I think I probably misspoke a little bit about like it only needing to go in a singular direction. I was thinking more in terms of like the direction I feel I want to head in versus using kind of mining from my past and making more personal pieces, specifically having to do with like, you know, my time in Baghdad as like a combat veteran. Like that's, you know, certainly like a well of potential material, but it's something I've tried to shy away from. And that, you know, when I work on those, it almost feels kind of like a cathartic process. It's kind of like I'm trying to work through some things, but, you know, I think my interests, especially moving on to graduate school, are elsewhere. And one of the pitfalls I'm hoping to avoid is being labeled a certain type of artist, specifically like a veteran artist. That stuff is there. I'm going to do it. But that was just a piece I sat on for so long that, you know, I had to make it and just kind of be done with it so I can, you know, transition onto other projects that are more in line with, you know, other concerns moving forward. I'm not as interested in living in the past.
I see. I know that we've talked previously in other podcasts, but that kind of isolation has made you think back on things and reflect. And that was partially like what made you go back and make this work.
I think oddly enough, that's not something I can attribute entirely to, you know, the pandemic. I mean, that's been life for like the last 15 years now. So it's just stuff that's been there long before I ever decided I was going to go back to school and major in art studio or anything like that. I mean, it's just, it's day to day. It's something I live with every day. And, you know, it surfaces in different ways. Like it's not something I think about, but obviously and I would encourage anyone who feels that they're ready for it, you know, not necessarily that they need it, but they're ready for it, to seek out, like, you know, whatever therapy, it doesn't have to be counseling necessarily, but find something that allows you to move forward from any sort of trauma you might have. And, you know, it's not something that you're going to ever be without. It's just learning to manage it. And that manifests in a lot of different ways in my experience. I mean, if that's being outdoors or getting into a very specific sort of hobby, for lack of a better term, or, you know, finding another purpose, you can kind of manage those things. It's something I live with. I'll just leave it at that. And it's always there. It doesn't necessarily always need to be something I'm focused on, because sometimes I go into those projects and it does dredge up a lot of stuff. And that is probably good because it's something I have to work through and recognize. But at the same time, it's just, I'm not always interested in that.
For Zoe, this time, I've seen a lot of your work. Your photography usually has kind of like a painterly quality to them, which I really love. Can you talk more about your process for like your composition of your images and or how your practice has changed since you graduated from UC Davis?
Right now, my practice has changed more in the fact that thankfully, like, I have access to a studio space from where I work, so I'm still able to get studio lighting, whereas if I weren't working there, I'd have to use like natural daylight because I don't personally own any lights. But so far, like when I'm not working, I try to go out and shoot, and I get like a lot of like inspiration from things that I see day to day, or like abstract things, like something that I notice that's always around me, like for example, like shadows in my room, or shadows on like the way I like walk to work that just go unnoticed most of the time. So I basically work at the Academy of Art in the photography department, and there's a lot more equipment for students to use that UC Davis doesn't have, which is unfortunate because I think that the students should have more access to equipment, especially stuff that is being used in studios, in production. I graduated from Davis and I went straight into a studio setting working for a famous photographer. I'd probably be fired the very first day because there is a lot to know and a lot that Davis doesn't teach, which is unfortunate. But there's a lot more to photography that should be going like further into, like in the classroom, like more technical skills should be used, more use on like equipment, more programs. Like no one has learned Capture One. I think I was taught Capture One at Davis by a visiting professor, and it was Capture One like from 2009 or something. But yeah, so a lot of my studio practice has changed from where I work, and learning from working and learning these new programs, new lighting, and with the pictures that I sent to the basement gallery, it's all new practice, new lights. I'm using soft boxes, which we do have at Davis, but I'm also using like zoom reflectors and grids, and grids like focus the light more on something. And I'm also using gels, which Davis only has a handful of gels from like the theater department. Purchase a roll of gels, guys. And with like the orange pictures that I took them super last minute. It was something that, it was like whatever I had on hand, I'd use in the photo. So a student gave me an orange, ripped the orange apart, and I took photos of my own hand while like dripping water off of it. And then with that photo, I also used stuff that wasn't taught to me at Davis, such as like tethering to a computer and to Capture One. So I could see the picture as I took them on my computer and changed all my camera settings, as well as using a reflector and a grid to focus the light onto the top part of my hand where it was blue, which was also used with gels. And yeah, that's my whole photo practice. But since of the pandemic, I also started getting back into ceramics, which has been super fun. I haven't taken a ceramics class since high school. So it's been really relaxing, and it's something that takes my mind off of work and whatever else I have going on.
Yeah, for having like all of those resources, I know that like there's a lot of people that don't even know that the dark room exists in the basement. I just learned about the light cage like my junior year. Unfortunately, COVID came around and I was only able to use it like maybe once or twice, but I can see how that would expand your practice because you just have access to a lot more things. I mean, the photo classes that we have right now, I think the quarter system makes it difficult to just continuously always be learning new things, but it would be great if we can get more photography stuff at Davis. What is a Capture One? It would be so good to have a monitor to see, or like at least know how to connect the monitor to see how you're taking photographs. Or anything like that, even connecting to your phone at a basic level.
Yeah, it's something that I would honestly love to go back to Davis and like try to implement into the courses. And that's like another thing, how you didn't know how the light cage existed until your junior year. I found out about the light cage from the first photo class I ever took, but that's also like the visiting professor that doesn't work at Davis full time. His name is Chris Nickel. He's really amazing. His work is amazing as well. I believe he's still in the Bay Area, but he was the one that taught me Capture One, took us into the studio. It was like beginning photography. So I knew about it since the beginning, which most students should know about because you should be in the studio shooting.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to actually extend this question to Grace. Do you mind talking about your experiences at Davis and how kind of like the art world can pair?
Yeah, sure. So I've been in two art worlds. After I graduated from Davis, I moved down to the LA area. That's where my family's at, and that's where I'm from. And then in 2013, I moved to Cleveland, Ohio, which is where I'm currently at. I would say Davis is a lot, I can only speak for my own experience. So I don't want anyone to feel like I'm talking over their experiences or I'm invalidating their experiences. I can only speak for myself. In my opinion, Davis was very nice. The professors, I was there in 2006. A lot of the professors that I had are actually retired right now. The professors I had, I felt like they really, you know, kind of held your hand and led you like, okay, if this is what you want to do, this is what you have to learn to do it. Okay, now we're going to walk this way because this is what you want to do. So, you know, they were very kind. Overall, they were very gentle. they never made me feel like I was wasting their time or I wasn't worth it to be their student. You know, they made me felt like I had a reason to be there and those reasons were right. For me, the Los Angeles, well, not just the Los Angeles art scene, but Los Angeles in general, to me is very cliquey. In a lot of ways when I'm there, I feel like I'm dealing with a bunch of Regina Georges. I know that sounds so mean, but that's what I feel like. You go to networking events, except no one wants to network with you. So I always thought like, okay, then why are we here? You know, it was very difficult for me to get gallery shows in LA. If there was an art event where they have artists there doing live art, very rarely do they want to pay you, which I found a little bit unusual, you know, because the city has a lot of money. I've seen their housing prices. The reason why I ended up moving to Cleveland was because I was trying to get into an MFA program. I applied to 7. I got rejected by all of them. And I'm like, okay, time to apply to art internships. So I finally got one at a fine arts printing press called Zygote Press. And then, so that's how I ended up in Cleveland. I would say professionally, it is a lot easier in Cleveland. People are more willing to pay you, which is odd because this is a city in many ways that's still recovering from the 1970s. So that was kind of surprising that people wanted to pay me. It's the downside is, I don't know if it's just more noticeable here because the city is smaller and therefore you notice it more, but it's a very segregated city. Not everyone ends up having the same opportunities. This is probably true in every city, but you can go to one part of the city that is, predominantly African American, and they're like, well, when they put out this call for artists, they never came here and told us about it. We didn't apply for it because we didn't know about it, you know? So it is still very segregated. It's still very, in many ways, it's still very atomized. Like every community is kind of doing its own thing. And there's not a lot, I feel like there is not a lot of inter-community dialogue. And maybe it's just more noticeable in a city of 500,000 people versus a city, I think LA is like, 4 million people now? And then no one knows anyone in a city of 4 million people, or else in a city of 500,000 people, stuff like that is more noticeable. My only advice to people who come out of an art program is really to start networking, whether it's joining if you're a ceramicist, joining a community ceramics room, if you're a photographer, joining a community dark room, things like that. I think that really helps with you professionally. That's just been my experience.
I'd have to also agree with Grace on that. I think that if I didn't start working immediately in an art field, I wouldn't be as more active taking more or making more photographs or artwork in general. And a lot of my coworkers definitely push me to create more. And I think networking is a really big part of that. Like once you have a community, it's easier to get feedback from other people and talk about what you enjoy.
Yeah, it sounds like it really depends on kind of what you're looking for in terms of like a community of artists or how you want your work to be received location-wise, it sounds like from what Grace was talking about. Yeah, that's really interesting that you've had such different, interactions with other people in the art community just based on where you've been located. So I might have to keep that in mind in the future when I start applying for graduate schools and start going out and venturing off into the real world. Okay, so we've talked indirectly about imposter syndrome in like our previous podcast. To Justin or everyone, how do you feel that you've overcome or gotten better at managing it, if you have? I know that I'm still working on it. It's very difficult, especially when you're not in a group of people, like in a studio and things like that. But how would you say that you guys are managing it?
This is going to sound incredibly mean and judgmental, but it has been my experience that everyone you see, they have, I don't want to say faults, they have a lot of weaknesses. I'm not going to personality or psychology. Professionally, they would have a lot of weaknesses. There are some things they're just not very strong at, and maybe they're very good at hiding it, so you don't see it right away. But once you get to know them, you'll notice, oh, this person, they just can't do this. Okay, you know. And so my advice to people is, you know yourself best, and therefore, you're like, I have this long list of things I can't do, that I don't do well, that I struggle with. I've been struggling with this since I was 4 years old. I work hardest. I spend most of my time on this. I still suck at it. And what I want people to know is every single person on planet Earth has that long list. You just don't know them as well as you know yourself, so you don't see it. And it's also been my experience, I might be talking about a certain orange person, that the more people say they don't have weaknesses and they don't have faults and they're great at everything and they have the biggest, best words and brain, they have a longer list of weaknesses. Let's just leave it at that.
No, that's very true. That's like overcompensation, you know, due to a very acute awareness of your own faults and weaknesses. So yeah, you've got to broadcast otherwise. And I think, you know, more pertinent to the specifics that you mentioned, unfortunately, a lot of people buy into that. And, you know, I'll just leave it at that. Since I'm unmuted, I'll just say the whole imposter syndrome thing. Like, I don't expect that's something that ever really goes away. And, you know, in talking to artists that have come out of like MFA programs at Davis and elsewhere, or even instructors, like, you know, that's something you continue to struggle with. So I guess one way to kind of combat that is just accept it and lean into it and, you know, just keep doing what you do. And yeah, I mean, if you have weaknesses, to borrow a phrase, you know, train your weaknesses. Try to, you know, if you want to get better at something, you have to practice it. And it's difficult. And, you know, I think with art, there's a lot of technical stuff that people don't feel proficient in sometimes. There's also a matter of like comparing yourself to others. And if, you know, if we've learned nothing from Sister Carita Kent or John Cage or Bruce Mao, you know, that's something you need to kind of nip in the bud. Just, it's a matter of sincerity and being truthful to what you're, you know, you set out to accomplish. And then going, I guess, kind of connecting this to the whole networking thing, build a network. I mean, build a community. I hate to use the term network. I feel like that's very, I don't know. It seems like it takes, you know, more than you give back. Like, you have to reciprocate. And, you know, I don't like to look at people as commodities or like some opportunity for me to gain something. It's, I don't know. I guess if you're more sincere, you know, you find those people that you mesh with that are outside of, you know, they're doing things other than what you're doing. And you just connect with them and stay in touch and support each other. I think that's been one of the biggest things for me. And we're all almost entirely extant on social media now. So how hard is it to share what somebody else is doing? If, you know, and it should come from a place of sincerity. Like, I'm interested in this. I'm happy for this person. I'm intrigued by what they're doing.
Yeah, I saw this quote the other day that was saying, like, am I, like, if you're questioning yourself, like, am I a writer? Am I an artist? you are probably it, because, you know, if you're the real thing, you're deathly afraid of ruining something that's great. But if you're the imposter, you're super egotistical about things that you can achieve. So like, after I heard that quote, I was like, I might think about that for a minute. You know, I'm sitting here like really wanting to do something great, and, you know, knowing that it's going to take work and knowing that I might not make it is a lot better approach to that.
I think that also speaks to, like, you know, like a level of effort. Like, if you're questioning yourself, then that means you're trying. And if you're trying, then you're open to learning, you know, as opposed to assuming that you are this thing, you know everything. Yeah, I totally agree. That's a great quote.
My roommate had asked me the other day, is like, why do you like sometimes think that, like, you know, even when you finish a project and you're decently okay with it, why don't you think that like it's super great? And I was like, if I think it's great and I think it's perfect, that means that I have nothing else to learn. And if I have nothing else to learn, then there's no point in continuing, basically. Zoe, here's the question. What would you say is the biggest thing that you learned about being part of the Basement Gallery?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think for myself personally, the biggest thing I learned is that I absolutely love exhibition design. I absolutely love creating these experiences for people, which I'm sure you guys are experiencing it as well, especially like starting the whole like underground sessions with the rest of the team last year. And just like creating like a new space for people to share what they love and what they enjoy doing. Like, all the DJs love making music, all of the students love creating artwork. Like, just having this space where anyone could be whoever, whatever they want, show whatever they want. I think it's really great, and I think it's a great thing to have, especially on campus. And I think that was like one of my biggest takeaways, was just knowing that I enjoy giving a space to people who don't have that space. And I am kind of putting it into like future art projects that I have planned, where I want to use what I know to give other people a voice. Yeah. And I hope you guys are feeling that too by creating like a podcast and doing everything online. I think you guys are amazing at what you're doing, and I love it.
Yeah, I'm so excited when COVID is over and we can like start doing like in-person shows. Like, I really wanted to like do like a happening or something. I don't know if that's been done for the Basement Gallery. That would be so much fun. Maybe even have like previous Basement Gallery people come back and, you know, just enjoy the space again. Would you say that you've like found kind of like a similar community, or like, do you think that you'll try to reach out to find one like the Basement Gallery in the future? Like a similar community of like artists, you know, working together towards like some sort of goal. It doesn't necessarily have to be shows or exhibitions or anything.
For now, I think just because I'm like mainly in the photography world right now, I think in the future I'll find another like community that would really love to put stuff together. I mean, I'm sort of working on that right now, especially working with some of the students at the school. I've realized that a lot of them have the same like mindset and ideas that I have. It's a really good question, like thinking about it. It's something I haven't thought about like more recently. It's just that like, since I am working with a lot of the students at the academy, I do see like a lot of their like views are similar to mine, and that like I want to help them achieve what I wish I could have achieved while I was in school, or like help them like set their path so they could go that way. Still a work in the progress. I mean, eventually I'll want to like get more and like into like the art world and meet more people, but it's kind of hard when everything is online.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, quarantine makes those things a little bit more difficult. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For Justin and Grace, how would you say that you went about choosing grad programs? I know that we kind of talked about earlier that location and kind of interests play a big part of that, but what was like the main reason why you chose a certain grad school, or what was like the hardest aspect of choosing a grad school that you would like to attend?
For me, it was a combination of the school having a good MFA program. before I lived in California, I was actually living in Iowa. So a lot of the MFA programs I applied to were in the Midwest. I just wanted to go back. So in a way, I did go back to the Midwest, just not for an MFA program.
And for you, Justin?
I happened upon a program. It was actually, you know, mentioned kind of off the cuff by an instructor. So I looked into it and I'm like, this is too good to be true. This is exactly like what I would like to do. So I applied thinking like, you know, really nothing of it, but and was accepted. I was looking, you know, I had very specific needs. With an MFA program, it was, I had to find a low residency program. I wanted something centered on, you know, with an emphasis on environmental art, the Anthropocene, you know, just environmental issues, injustices, that sort of thing, and creating equity. So I, you know, don't tell anyone, but I only applied to this program and I got in. So I, you know, I had a whole list of schools I was going to apply to, and I had been thinking about it for well over a year. And, you know, sure enough, it didn't matter because like everything else, I tend to procrastinate. So some of the programs were like a non-starter. I can't pick up and relocate with, you know, a family of five and, you know, head to UCLA, as much as I would love to work with like some of the instructors there or even at Berkeley. So yeah.
You guys want to plug anything, have any future projects that you're working on that you want to talk about, or something you're reading, something that someone you're inspired by, any of those things are fine.
I currently have an art show up at Prama Art Space. It's spelled Prama, P-R-A-M-A. Then the next word is just Art Space. Google them because they also have a virtual show up in case anyone just doesn't feel safe or, you know, you live far away to see it in person. So if you get a chance, Google Prama Art Space and check out their website and look at the virtual show.
I don't have anything to plug. I'm not going to plug like my social media or my website. I'm excited to, you know, use some of the momentum I have to try to transfer that to grad school. I just want to say that like coming to Davis was an awesome experience, connecting with other people, kind of building communities with other people. Like I can't stress that enough. And I'm constantly amazed by like my peers and the resiliency.
Sorry. I definitely agree with Justin on that. I love seeing all of like my old peers, even like you guys still in school. I love seeing what you guys are doing, and you guys motivate me all the time on keep pushing and keep doing what I'm doing.
All right, thank you guys for joining us.
We ran out of time to hear everyone's goodbyes and unfortunately had a second session that didn't record. We had a rich conversation started by Sierra about the positive things we've accomplished due to COVID, explored how studio classes are run through Zoom for grace, and took a peek at Justin's stack of must-reads. You can follow Justin at jmoorestudio, Zoe at Zoe Reinhardt, and Grace at grace_wins_ego. As we conclude our third podcast miniseries, the conversations seem to have gotten better and better. I'd like to thank all the guests we've had thus far, and I'm excited for those we get to talk to in the future. I'd like to also take this time to let you know that we're accepting applications for next year's Basement Gallery Director positions. So if you like our podcast, shows, vibe, and would like to be a part of the team, make sure to apply. We'd love to have you. For my graduating seniors, happy final quarter of your Davis journey. Don't forget to sign up for senior shows. You can find the writings and the artwork discussed in this podcast on the UC Davis Basement Gallery Instagram. At UCD_basement_gallery.